it's important that you're building confidence as well. And now, having said that, if you do have a little bit more confidence, but you're still wondering what to do, then what about trying something more interesting? Welcome back to the Commercial Property Investor Podcast with me, Jerry Alexander. Today, I want to chat to you about a question that we frequently get asked. What is the best commercial property investment for a beginner? What's the best strategy? If you're finding that it's difficult to get started or to get that next building, then hopefully this episode's going to help you. But before I get into that, let me share with you what I've been up to in the last week or so. I'm sure you know the world of commercial property investing, and operating commercial property is super glamorous, right? We've got unending champagne, fast cars, passive income pouring out of everywhere, and customers that treat you like real royalty. I'm sorry to burst that impression, but it's not really like that, at least not for me. I do appreciate that I could make it a lot better by improving my management approach. But for one reason or another, over the last 10 days, I've had to go above and beyond that. I've had to roll up my sleeves, literally. And we had one situation where a building has two external drains, street drains, if you will, draining out a paving area that is outside one of our doors. And we don't have any buildings, I would say, that are in flood risk areas. But nevertheless, this particular day I was near this building and it taught me something, because both drains got blocked. And the water was literally 1 millimetre, maybe 2 millimetres, from starting to pour into that building. In fact, it had already gone into the building next door and ruined the carpet, the skirtings and all that sort of stuff. And I'm looking at this thinking, right, what are we going to do here? Now, the overall areas looked after by a factor. We got in touch with the factor and explained that the drains are blocked. And the factor's emergency team said, oh, no, that's due to lots of rain. We've had loads of rain. They're not blocked. It's just excessive amount of rain. We're not going to send anyone out tonight, but we'll pop out tomorrow morning to have a look and sort it out then. And now I'm looking at it, I know if it rains one more shower, it's pouring in. And it's going to be several £100,000 insurance claim. And I know that because the amount of money we spent on the building recently, and also because it's actually about 100 mil lower than the ground outside. So what do you do, right? I'm not waiting for the next rain shower. I got to clean these drains out myself, which is what we did. Lots of fun. Got them cleared out. Obviously sent a stinking letter or email, should I say, to the factor that night. But nevertheless, had to get that all sorted out. And more recently than that, I've had to unblock a rather savagely blocked toilet. Again, I was passing. Thought, well, okay, I'll sort that one out. And if any of you have ever heard of a grease trap, I had to sort one of them out in the last week as well. But for those of you that don't know what that is, be thankful, move on, nothing to see here. And I had to find a fault on a biomass boiler. So again, I'm on a site, there's a biomass problem, and I'm one of those people, and if you've listened to this podcast much, you probably know, I'm one of those people who really loves to prove the so-called experts wrong. So I didn't take the whole thing apart, but I did take back apart all the feeder and all that stuff. And we'd had emails back and forth about, oh, you need to replace this pipe, you need to do this, you need to replace that pump or whatever. Do you know what it was? The filter was completely clogged. It's a metal filter. It needed a good old bash, knock all the stuff off. It started working perfectly. God, part of me is like satisfied, sorted that thing out. The other part of me is, oh man, really? Am I having to do this? Now, I appreciate that maybe there's a few fingers pointing back and maybe I shouldn't be doing it, but I was there. It just happened to be so. And another day I was chainsawing up a very large beech tree. In fact, it was actually only a branch from a beech tree, but the branch probably weighed, I'm not kidding you, 2 to 3 tons, maybe more. It's an absolute monster, or at least it was. And actually, to be fair, that wasn't really a problem. I actually chose to do that and I enjoy doing that sort of thing. But there's also been some good wins. Now, the inquiry numbers since the start of the year, I've mentioned on a previous episode, are fairly high. They're good. They're buoyant. And they're continuing to be so. And it looks like we might have let that large industrial space I told you about a week or so ago. And when we're done, I will give you a whole story about that and I'll record a podcast about the whole episode. But I'm not going to tempt fate. We think we've got a customer. And there's been more inquiries for that too, which has been really interesting. And what that's going to do is really help us get to that turnover target for August of this year. It's going to have a significant impact on that. And plus, the one other thing that is a positive is when this episode comes out, if you're listening to it on Thursday, I'm going to be on my way to the French Alps. Yeah, I'm going skiing with a few friends. Looking forward to that. It's our annual trip. So we're the weather's looking pretty good, and there's quite a lot of snow this year. So yeah, excited about that. Anyway, back to today's chat. What is the best commercial property investment strategy for beginners? It's a really common query, especially for those that are still trying to find their feet in the world of commercial. And for those of you that have been looking at it for a while from many different angles and perspectives and haven't actually got started yet, I'm hoping this episode might help for you. So many individuals we've collaborated with over the years have pondered this very question: should we dive straight into a complex deal, or is there merit in taking a more measured approach? And lots of people I work with have gone straight into more complex deals. But do you have to? Not really. Does it have to be the situation of it must be a stellar deal or not bother, stay at home? Of course not. If you have big plans but you find it difficult to actually get started, then consider a simple buy-to-let. It would give you some confidence and get things moving. That step proves you're a serious buyer to agents, to lenders, industry insiders, and probably most importantly of all, it kind of proves it to yourself. It's important that you're building confidence as well. And now, having said that, if you do have a little bit more confidence, but you're still wondering what to do, then what about trying something more interesting? Because you've had maybe some good experience with residential, you've done a few different developments, you've maybe even split property, or you've added rooms on or extensions, whatever. Perhaps something like a small mixed-use development might suit, where you're perhaps doing shops and uppers. So there's a residential element which you're safe and feel like you know how that works. But the other element is keeping a shop, or instead of putting in resi, you're putting in serviced apartments. We did a podcast recently with Andrew and Chris from Brightstone. Their first commercial was a shop on the ground floor, which they've done up, and then two serviced apartments upstairs. Felt comfy because the serviced apartments, something they've done before, residential, the shop, something simple, got the process started. Then they've moved on to a commercial multiple occupancy. So maybe let me take a moment to thank Office R&D for supporting the podcast. It's really important to us that we only work with sponsors that we've used ourselves. It's all about being authentic, right? Office R&D is the best flexible workspace platform we've come across, and believe me, we've tried a few systems over the last 20 years. Office R&D helps us manage our invoicing, customer community, reporting, building access, and many more aspects of our day-to-day operations. Why not book yourself a free demo to see how they can help you free up more time to grow your business? Follow the partner link in the show notes. Maybe you could do that as a stepping stone, or maybe just go into a small-scale CMO with an element of development. You just have to ask yourself, what can I add? What does the value add come from, right? And is splitting it into smaller units something that would do that? Or is it maybe even it's two units right now and the market demand is for bigger units? And really, you've got to go and work that out, haven't you? What's local man like? But remember, value is significantly affected by the income in this commercial space. So that's really what you're trying to manipulate, is the income. So you don't have to go all in on that first one. And some people do try to do that, and they never end up going in at all, by the way. Baby steps might be the right answer. Now, a simple buy-to-let, which has a tenant already in place, so this is real vanilla product, something that's on the market, it's got a tenant, you might get a yield of between 7 and 15%, say. And it depends on where it is, how the perceived risk is on the tenant, whether they've got a long lease, whether a national, small, local tradesperson, whatever it is. But that's kind of your range. Sure, there's going to be some less yield and there's going to be some higher. But as I say, it's the risk really that's counted in that. But you might find some off-market deals. I've seen off-market deals where simple buy-to-let might have a 10, 12%, maybe higher yield. And sometimes That's priced on the yield on the downstairs retail unit, but actually the upstairs comes with it. So you might go a step further, though. Rather than buying a simple buy-to-let as a tenant, you might go for a unit with no tenant, or perhaps a motivated seller, or a sale and leaseback. They could give you a good starter. And that sale and leaseback thing sounds like, oh, crikey, that sounds a bit complicated. I mean, basically, it's finding a motivated seller or a business that needs to release some cash. It might be because the owner wants to leave the business and the people buying the business need to take some money out of the property to be able to buy out the seller, and that the sale and leaseback is effectively them selling the property to a landlord, maybe you, and then putting a lease in place so they can continue operating their business there, but they're charging or being charged a rent. So maybe a sale and leaseback might be a 12% or 15% or whatever it is. And obviously there's negotiation around both the selling price or the buying price and the lease. But that could give you a good starter. And, you know, the one about buying it without a tenant, obviously it'd be better to try and find a tenant for it before you buy it. But if you've done a lot of due diligence and research and you know that tenants are out there looking, then particularly if it's off market, finding a motivated seller, buying that property and then finding the tenant is where you add that value. There is a risk to that, of course, but that's why you're trying to build up your equity by doing that, you're going to help build up your equity. Because the thing is, if you buy a straightforward buy-to-let that's at a certain percentage yield because it's got a tenant in there, unless you're buying it with a really high yield because they're motivated and you're getting it off market, you're really probably buying it at market price, which means it's difficult to add value. That industrial unit I was telling you about, we actually bought that with a tenant that had quite a long lease in it. So the price was pegged at the level that the lease was paying us. But actually when the business went bust, it released both them, but also us from that agreement. So when we've gone back out to market, market price has changed considerably. It's a bit like the residential market, particularly in Scotland at the moment, where prices have just been going up and up. Landlords are almost happy to get their properties back because they can then reset the value, reset the rental when the market, when they put it back on the market. It can be the same in commercial, but interestingly, bearing in mind that the value is based often around the income, that means you could significantly impact the valuation of the property. Anyway, I'm getting off track. So the key thing here is, if you're still trying to build equity rather than just part money, it's really important to find that value add. Otherwise, you will run out of money pretty quickly. I know there are some people out there who have lots of money and what they want to do is park it in commercial, and that's absolutely fine. But if you're trying to build equity and your pot, then you need to try and find those ways of adding value, of which there's many. So each of these scenarios that I've just spoken about, they kind of illustrate how beginners, starters, can tailor their initial investments to match their comfort level, their aspirations. And it's not about fitting some predetermined mold, you know, I must go big, must buy a CMO, whatever. It's really about working out what approach aligns with your goals and the level of risk you're willing to take. The key thing is working out what's creating the breaks, what's slowing you down, what is it that's stopping you from getting going here, what's the resistance for you to get started, and then you need to get underneath that. So whatever way you need to get around that, you have to work it out. And it just might be that it's down to getting a deal and a smaller one that's got less risk, but it gets you started. You don't have to buy the perfect first deal. Some get caught in that trap of aiming for the stars and they may never end up leaving the launch pad. As I said, baby steps are sometimes the answer. A straightforward buy-to-let with no tenant will give you that ability to add value. But if you're finding even that challenging, there's still merit in starting with something safe and less risky. But remember, returns aren't solely measured in cash flow. So if you do buy a property that has a tenant and you think, oh man, this is only giving me 12% or whatever it is, which for some of you might be a lot, there are additional benefits here. There's gaining experience. There's earning street cred. there's building your network. And I think probably the most important thing is getting over the inertia. Because I've spoken to a few of our listeners and people that we've worked with who just can't seem to get over that inertia. And I think you've just got to work out, is there a way for me to break that mold? And maybe buying something safe. I'm not saying, this is not me advising you all to go out and buy shops or basic buy-to-lets. But you got to work out what it is that's preventing you taking that action. And as I say, the cash flow is one thing. Sure, that's the big thing we're all after. But that over those first few deals, the other real benefits are gaining experience for the next one, earning street cred with the commercial agents, with the valuers, with the lawyers, with the business community. All these different people will pay attention, which does allow you to build your network. And then, of course, as I say, the most important thing, I think, is actually you're overcoming the inertia and getting started. Now, all of these are worth a lot over your investing career. The most expensive thing, though, the thing that will cost you the most is actually probably doing nothing. That's the most expensive thing, doing nothing. If you can find something a bit safer, a bit more vanilla, but you'll gain all these other benefits, maybe that's better than waiting for that perfect deal to come along. Now, I hope those of you who've made it to this end of the podcast do take some action. Get a rung on the board. Stick your foot in front of the other. Get a marker in the sand. It's time to work out what's holding you back and work out a way around it. So thanks for tuning in. I hope that's helped. Did you know it's actually quite hard to track who our listeners are? Now, we do get general data on where episodes are downloaded, but not by whom, of course. But we can see, oh, look, there's some, we're getting loads of downloads in Iceland or in Australia or in Kazakhstan or wherever it is. So if you can spare a moment, reach out to say hi on social media, leave a review or email us directly. Just give us an idea of who you are. It'd be great to just get a better sense of who some of our listeners are. And if you've got any questions or topics you'd like us to cover on the podcast, then please do drop us a line. And of course, feedback is our friend, right? All feedback is good to hear. So if you've got any feedback for us, please reach out. You'll find us in the show notes. There's some details there about CPI website. You'll find me, Jerry Alexander, on LinkedIn, all the usual stuff. And of course, we're on Instagram. Not that everybody looks at Instagram, but you'll find us on these sort of different platforms. It'd be great to just get to know you a little bit more. Thank you so much for tuning in. I look forward to catching up with you again very, very soon.